Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. I don't love my share of my life. Tearing God it's in me by Leelasa Bethetoko Azadashemonika. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. Sit back, relax, or do whatever it is that you're doing. We're glad that we're coming along with you. We have a great show for you today. You know, I was thinking, I never talk about the weather, but if this weather keeps up, we're really going to have one of these December-May relationship things going on over here. But that's neither here nor there. In this half hour of the show, we'll be having Rabbi Yitzchak Wagner, who's coming to town to speak, at the Holocaust Memorial in just a couple of weeks, Germany 70 years later. Rabbi Wagner is the first German rabbi born after the Holocaust. And we're going to talk about Germany and all and what's going on over there. It is a cappella time season still. And we probably will talk about that in itself. It's a portion of the week is Achrimos, which is chapter 15 of Leviticus and following. We've got an awesome Hasidic story. But before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Hamas fired a rocket into southern Israel. No one was hurt. In response, Israel destroyed a lookout post in Gaza. No one was hurt there either. This is the fourth rocket shot from Gaza since December. Israeli police arrested 2 Arabs from Jerusalem when they found a Jewish man in a stolen car they were driving, stuffed into the trunk. The man was bound and had been stabbed several times. The 2 Arabs asked the man for help with a lift in Tel Aviv. They robbed the man, tied him up, stabbed him, and put him in the trunk. So much for good Samaritans. Israel's population stands at 8.3 million people, 6.2 million Jewish, and 1.7 million Arabs. The Israeli economy grew 7% in the last quarter of 2014. That's a lot. Its highest rate of growth in more than a decade. The gain makes up for the small gain of 0.03% during the third quarter when Israel was at war with Gaza. Speaking at a meeting of the Conference of European Rabbis, Pope Francis called on all Christians to stand firm against anti-Semitism. The anti-Semitic tendency and certain acts of hatred and violence in Europe are of concern. Every Christian cannot be but firm in the condemnation of all forms of anti-Semitism, said the pontiff. In related news, Rabbi Arthur Schneier of Manhattan's Parkey Synagogue is being knighted by Pope Francis. I didn't know you could be knighted by a pope. But anyway, Schneier, who has done extensive work in interfaith relations, will become a member of the Knights of Sylvester, an honor shared with the likes of Oscar Schindler and Bob Hope. It snowed 2 inches on Mount Harmon, Israel's only ski slope. It never snows in April in Israel. Temps this week in Israel are expected to reach the 90s, so get that skiing in while you can. And finally, Israel was ranked the 11th happiest country in the world in 2014, according to the World Happiness Report. We've been making these reports since 2014, when the Happiness Report was begun. The world's happiest countries are Switzerland, Iceland, Denmark, Norway, and Canada. The U.S. ranked 15th. That's 4 behind Israel. The Palestinian Authority was 108. And at the bottom of the list are Syria, Burundi, and Togo. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. Germany 70 years later, a lecture by Rabbi Yitzhak Mendel Wagner, who is the first native-born German rabbi since the Holocaust, will be speaking at the Holocaust Memorial Center on Orchard Lake Road on Monday, May the 4th at 7 p.m. It's free, and of course, there is a dessert afterwards, which will be kosher. For more information, call 248-536-9604. And with no further introduction, we welcome Rabbi Yitzhak Wagner to the show. How are you, Rabbi Wagner?
Baruch Hashem, thank you very much. How are you?
Good. Baruch Hashem, thank God. I'm so glad that you're, I'm pleased that you're coming, and I'm glad that we were able to track you down on your forays yes. through the countryside of Germany. So yes. This is a quite a distinction that you are, you're 35 years old, it says here right here, so I don't have to ask you how old
yeah.
you are.
Yeah.
And that you're the first person, the Holocaust was 70 years ago, that there's nobody that was born within the 35 years before you that became a rabbi. What do you think led to this, that how is it that you were the first German-born person to become a rabbi, Rabbi Wagner?
It's a very, very interesting and very, very difficult question to answer. I have absolutely no idea how it happened. most of
Fair
the
enough.
Jews in Germany today, they are from former Soviet Russia. So because of what happened in Russia all those centuries with the communists, so most of the Jews who came to Germany after the war, after 1989, were not religious Jews. I guess that's one of the reasons. So my history is a different history, and so most of the Jews here are not that religious because they are from Russia, and I had like a different background. So perhaps I went to Israel when I was 18. In Germany, you have to do civil service or army. Today it changed, but when I was 18, it was like this, and I chose the option to do civil service, but not in Germany, but to do it in Israel.
And they let you do that.
The government to pay. Yeah, what?
And they let you do that in America. That would be called draft dodging.
No, but us, it was an option to do the civil service abroad. And so I got the government to pay for me doing civil service in Israel. So I could learn in the yeshiva half-time. And the other half of the day, I was working with the mental disabled Orthodox Jews. And somehow that's how it started.
Very interesting. So, but do you know anything about Germany, like around, there were a lot of Jews that actually flooded into Germany after World War II. They were in the DP camps and Pucking. And a lot of them, I suppose, didn't stick around in Germany, but went elsewhere. They went to France, they went to the United States, to Canada, to South America, to Israel.
Yeah.
So not many of them. So you're saying the influx of Jews into Germany, you said, really started in 1989 with Glasnost and Perestroika.
Yes, yes.
Okay. So you're saying most German Jews would be then Russian expats. You're saying?
Let's see, my community in Krefeld, which is a community about 1,000 members we have, I'm pretty sure we have up to 98-99% Jews from former Soviet Russia. The first language in the community is Russian.
Mm-hmm. And how do you handle that? How's your Russian become?
My Russian is quite хорошо. This
okay.
means it's quite okay in the moment. It's not enough to give a real good shiur in philosophy, but it's enough that they cannot sell me. So my wife is from Ukraine, so she speaks Russian, and I hear a lot of Russian at home. And the parents of my wife, of course, my in-laws. Yeah, I always make mistakes with in-laws and inmates, so I see.
Better in-laws and outlaws is another thing. Yes, okay.
Yeah, yeah, right. So my in-laws, they speak also Russian, so I'm very much under Russian influence. And when I give a shiur, so they translate it to Russian. Within the year, so I started to understand and to speak a little bit, so that's how I can handle it.
Okay. If you're just joining us, our guest today is Rabbi Yitzhak Mendel Wagner, who's been coming to town on May 4th to speak at the Holocaust Memorial. What's it like being Jewish in post-Nazi Germany? You should give the question.
It's special because the people here are not used to religious-looking Jewish people. So So everywhere I go with the kippah, so it's not talk about anti-Semitism. It's just like the people that they don't know really what it is. So they, I mean, somehow perhaps they know what it is, but they cannot believe the eyes. They see something actual like this walking on the street. Let me tell you, when we had first time coming a Chazan for the high holidays, he schlepped with him his brother and friends of his brother, so we were like 10 Orthodox looking, very Orthodox looking, you know, with big hats and kapotes, walking on the street to do tashlich on Rosh Hashanah. So there you could, this was people didn't see something like this in our city since the times of Napoleon. So you could see that everywhere we walked, people looked, so, you know, everybody looked at us, and it was a rainy day, and there was a car driving a little bit too fast, and in a curve, I saw that he was looking at us, and he lost control over the car, and he jumped into the tree. So, Baruch Hashem, nothing happened to him, but the car was finished. So, when you walk around like an Orthodox Jew in Germany, so this could happen to you. That people are not used to see something like this.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've been watching German culture since I was in probably middle school, junior high school, and in my mind, the average German, and of course I know this is stereotyping, there's a certain xenophobia, fear of foreigners, or anything which is not German in Germany. Is that true? And do you see that?
Yes, a little bit. I mean, I cannot say this about everyone, but in general, yes, it belongs where you go. If you go to a big city like Berlin, if you go to a city like Cologne, if you go to a city like Düsseldorf, where there are many students from all over the world, so that might be different. But if you go to Bavaria and you go to one of these little Städtlach over there, so there the people are very stick together with each other. And also in such places, especially in the east, also in the cities there it's totally different, and there you have also much more racism, much more problems with anti-Semitism. It's much more in the east today than it's in the west.
Mm-hmm. Is that because
it's more cultural, then it's not like this.
Is that traditionally Germany is actually divided north and south because of the different religions?
Yes.
There the east and west was something which is more political. Would you say that the rise of, or the intensity of anti-Semitism in the east is because of the Russian influence after so many decades of being under Russian control?
Yeah, it's a hard question. I mean, it's a very hard question. It could be that so after so many years after being under the Russians, that somehow they had developed a special fascism idea because the communists were so much against it. Could be that it's like this. But one thing is for sure, there are places in eastern Germany, little towns, where there's a no-go areas for Jews. So if I would walk there with the kippah, it would be mamish dangerous to walk there.
Really?
Yeah.
And the federal government tolerates such practices? Like today in America...
No. They don't tolerate it, and they try to do something against it. But sometimes in the East, yes, such places where you cannot really do anything big against it. It's a huge problem.
Mm-hmm. So I suppose you in Western Germany look at East Germany kind of the same way that we look at, like, backwards Appalachia, just a bunch of hillbillies and hicks and backward people then.
Yeah. I mean, now the East is getting it's very nice, and many parts of the East, they look more nicer than in the West because they made everything new. But there's a special mentality in smaller cities in the East where we also see that the Nazi parties, like the neo-Nazi parties, which skinheads like to vote for, so they are much, much stronger in the East than it's in the West.
Okay, so now... There's also, after World War II and all of the, when atrocities became public knowledge, there became a certain apologeticism officially maintained by the German government. And we see that the remuneration that was given to Israel in the forms of yearly funds, and every taxi cab in Israel is a German-made car that was given to them. How does the average German in the street look at this, and have you ever come across this, like, collective guilt, you might say?
Yes, a little. There was a television show a year ago, and they asked some people on the street with the camera what they're thinking about the Holocaust. And it was very scary to see how many people answered that it was very, very, you know, bad what happened, but it's a long time ago. I didn't do it. My parents didn't do it. My grandparents, this was their generation. I think it's already time, you know, to get over it and not to have you know, this Yom HaShoah and 9th of November, perhaps it's a little bit too much. And wherever we go, you know, it's like a stigma on our head that people see the Germans, and they always, you know, they bring it in one word, you know, with Auschwitz and Dachau. And so there are people on the street who think like this. Yes, that is unfortunately true. But, yeah, I mean, that's the way it is.
I mean, can you blame them? I mean, this is something they said. I wasn't born. I didn't have any part of this. It's not anything I would do. It was my grandparents, my great uncle.
Yes,
it's not.
That's correct. But still, if something like this happened, then the children and the grandchildren and all the generations afterwards have a special duty to make sure that something like this doesn't happen again. And that's very important in Germany, and it's very important for the German government, because Holocaust education is something very, 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 very important in the German school system. They start learning about the Holocaust in kindergarten. That's as early as they start speaking about Anne Frank. The schools are going to Auschwitz. They put a lot of pressure in learning about what happened in Germany. But still, you have like people who are not educated or stupid people, and they think as they do. But you have them all over. I'm sure. In the States, we have also some people who, you know, claim the Holocaust never happened, and it's enough, you know, and always the Jews. So this is something you find everywhere, and in Germany as well. Just here, special to find it.
Okay, in case if you're just joining us again, our guest today is Rabbi Yitzhak Mendel Wagner. He is going to be speaking at the Holocaust Memorial Center on May 4th at 7 p.m. That's open to the public for free. What about the proliferation of Judaism in Germany? I think the last statistic I saw is that it was about 30,000 Jews living in Germany. Is that?
No, it's more. It's much more. It's over 100,000 Jews.
100,000 Jews.
It's over 100,000 Jews, and it's just 10,000 Israelis living in Berlin. Just 10,000 Israelis living in Berlin.
10,000. Okay, and out of a population, what's the population of Germany?
I have no idea, to be honest. I have no idea. 90 million, like this?
90 million. I was going to say 100 million. Okay. So 100,000 out of 90 million. There's not a whole lot of Jews living in Germany. If you're talking about...
It's not that much, but we never know how it could change. Now, if you take a look of the Jewish population, let's say 1980, and then, or 1988, and then 1992... So you see already it's a big difference. So if you see what's going on today in Europe, in the other countries like France and Budapest, Ungarn, then you never know. It could be that, you know, God forbid, you know, that if it's getting worse there, Jews are starting. We get calls from Jews in other countries to ask if we can help them to come to Germany because they don't want to stay in France. They don't want to go for whatever reason to Israel, so they're asking if there's a possibility the community could help them to come to Germany.
Interesting. Who would have thought?
Very interesting. Yeah.
Who would have thought? Now, I know in France, for example, and less so in Italy, and I think it's also true in like Belgium and Holland, synagogues don't have signs in front of them. And France, for example, you have to be on, and in Italy, I know this sure to be true, at Rome for sure, you have to be on a list in order to get past the guard to come in for services on Saturday morning. Is that true in Germany also? Are the synagogues hidden?
Yes. Security is very, very tough. It's very, very high. And people coming from America, when they come to visit our community, they are shocked that sometimes they don't even get in because on Shabbat they don't have a passport, for example. So it's strong security. Let's say our community in Krefeld, very interesting, is the most secure building in all Germany. It's more secure from the technic than the American embassy in Berlin, because we don't have a wall around the community, so it's just part of the street. That's why they put a couple of million euros in just having a front, you know, the front of the community, made it specially bomb blast secure. And that's the reality we have. We have the police always before the community building. Everybody who wants to go into the community has to go, like, by the airport through a metal detector, and he has to show his passport. And, that's the reality today.
Uh-huh. And people are just used to that. People living there are just used to this. This is part of the... Part of what you have to do, just like getting on an airplane here in America, you have to take your shoes off. So going to the synagogue to go pray to God, you have to go through the security.
Yes, our children are used to this. Just about a year and a half ago, My daughter's going to the went to the kindergarten in Düsseldorf. This is like 30 minutes. It's the next bigger city. They have a kindergarten and there's also security. But one day we brought her there and we see that the police is standing there with machine guns and bulletproof clothing. So they had to secure the children for like 3 or 4 weeks because the secret service of Germany, they had information that some Germans went to Syria to fight and they came back to our area. So they were very, very afraid that they're now very motivated to do something, and that's why the security can even get higher than its average.
Uh-huh. So you have your orange is probably our red, and your red is probably way off our charts even. So this is, but you sleep good at night, I suppose.
No, we sleep good at night. But today I went to a funeral, for example, and somebody passed away from the community. He wasn't active. Many people, about 500 people attended the funeral, so there had to be the police by the funeral. So they had to check every car who went into the cemetery, and you had to show your passport. So this is even by a funeral. If many Jews get together, the police always tries, you know, to show presence, and they know why.
Okay, that's a good thing, though. But okay, so let's talk about Judaism. You mentioned education in your city. Krefeld is not a big city, from what I understand.
I always say it's like bigger than Haifa. This always sounds good because Haifa is also not that big. But
Haifa is the third largest city, and it's the fourth largest city in Israel. So I mean, you know, so
right. So we have about 300,000, I guess, 300,000 people living in Krefeld.
Okay, that's actually bigger than the biggest city in Israel. Tel Aviv only, I think, has just 300,000. But, okay, and what about kosher foods, education, Jewish education, other things that Jews are interested in? What's available in Germany?
Kosher food is still a problem, but we have Germany is close to Belgium, and at least where we live in West Germany, and we are an hour and a half from Antwerp. And Antwerp in Belgium is like one of the Torah centers in Europe. And it has a lot of Jewish infrastructure, many kosher shops. So we, in our community, every month, once, twice, we are driving to Antwerp and we are buying all what we need, like books and kosher food. And we buy it from there. There are also now websites from Belgium selling the kosher food online. So then they ship it to you like next day. We have very few kosher products in the supermarket. It's not like in America, it's a dream. It's like, I guess, perhaps 80%, I have the feeling, it's like automatically kosher. In America, we are very, very far from that. Education, we have in Krefeld, we just like Sunday school. But we have the next bigger community, as I said, is Düsseldorf, 30 minutes away. And we send our children there. They have a kindergarten and they have an elementary school. The big problem is after elementary school, because as religious parents, we want to send our children like to yeshiva or to other places. And we don't have those in the area. There's just one gymnasium, it's called, one high school.
In English. High school, yes.
It's in Berlin, which is like 6 hours away. And many rabbis have to send the children to Antwerp to learn, which is a very big headache because, you know, you cannot drive your children every day an hour and a half to school. So the same family is there and just come back for Shabbat. And this is one of the things we really have to change in Germany. And we're working on this very, very hard to open a Jewish religious school in this part where we are living. That's the newest project.
Mm-hmm. Are things easier in Berlin? Berlin is a big city. I know there is a yeshiva in Berlin. I think there's even two yeshivas in Berlin. Is it easier to be Jewish in Berlin?
It's easier. It's much easier to be Jewish in Berlin. The only advantage we have to Berlin is that we are much more close to Antwerp. So very often, if Berlin is doing something, they have to bring the food and the infrastructure from Antwerp, and for them, it's very, very far. And for us, it's just, you know, over the border.
Uh-huh. Okay, indeed. That's going to wrap us up for us. Thank you again. The information on this is Rabbi Yitzchak Mendel Wagner, who is the first native-born German rabbi since the Holocaust, is making a presentation, it looks very upbeat, at the Holocaust Memorial Center, which is located on Orchard Lake Road in Farmington Hills, just north of 12 Mile Road. Admission is free. There will be a dessert reception afterwards. You can come and talk personally if you have any questions that you would like to pose to Rabbi Wagner. He'll be there at the evening for a while. And I look forward to seeing you, Reb Yitzchak.
Yes, I'm also very, very much looking forward. Can't wait.
Okay, take care, and we'll be talking.
Thank you, and I wish you and all your listeners a good Shabbos.
Okay, take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968. MDS Drug Detox. Herschel Feman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. It's time for some music. We're doing a cappella music this week. The reason is because, why is it a cappella these 6 weeks between Passover and Shavuos? Is because during this time, some 2,000 years ago, Rabbi Akiva's yeshiva, which was looked upon as one of the great yeshivas, suffered a plague, and 24,000 students died in a period of 33 days. Since then, Jews have observed this time period as a time of quasi-mourning. We do not listen to music, but singing is singing. It's not considered music. And I know people are saying, some of the stuff, Rabbi, that you play, I wouldn't call that music either during this time period. But listen, everybody's got their tastes. And I try to pick the best stuff possible. We also refrain from decorating our houses, getting married. What else do we refrain? Some people don't buy new clothes. We don't eat fruit that we haven't eaten in a year. Anything that's going to make us like overtly happy. You know, if you suddenly I saw like a breadfruit, I go, wow, a breadfruit. So I'd have to wait until after Shavuos to eat it. So we have then, with that explanation, this is Yesh Tikva, which has become a Jewish standard, and this is, it's a Benny Friedman song, and this version is sung by A.K.A. Pella, also known as a cappella.
Yeah.
assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. We have a public service announcement. What's the deal here? This is actually a little difficult to explain because this is not an event that you should go to. The World Zionist Congress is having elections as to its determine its governing board, which is in charge of allocating funds to charitable organizations in Israel. And there are various slates. So we have I got a letter from Sean Martin at the local chapter of the ZOA, the Zionist Organization of America, encouraging people to go to votezoa.org and to vote for your slate. Now, I've actually not done this yet, so I don't know what happens when you do this. So it's here. It says vote here, so I get to vote. And who's running? We have all these people, the Zionist Spring, Merkaz USA, Alliance for New Zionist Vision, American Forum for Israel, World Sephardic Zionist Organization, ARZA, representing Reform Judaism, Herut HaTikva, Green Israel Religious Zionist Slate, Zionist Organization of America. So you have to register, and then you get to vote for the slate. It's kind of sort of like the way they do it in Israel. You vote for the party rather than for the candidate. So go to Vote ZOA, and that'll take you to the MyVoteForIsrael.com, whatever that is. So you can do that. That's a really cool thing to do. And I don't even think you have to be Jewish, but like they say, it helps. That's it. Is your organization having, I think it's the last of my public service announcements. Let me get a quick look over here. Yes. Okay. Is your organization having a function? Want me to publicize it here for you? Absolutely free. Well, go to RabbiFinman.com, send me the information, and we will announce it as a public service announcement here on the show. Coming up next, for your listening pleasure, this is the Maccabees. And Ra'u Banim, listen, kids, or see, kids, actually.
Israel, studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the art studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The art studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The art studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. We got time for one more. This is L'cha Dodi, and again, it's a cappella doing it for you.
Shabbat Nikabla.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Yeah, I really have to talk about Encompass for just a half a second. The idea of lying around in a hospital just to get an IV just seems so wrong. And a person, okay, they have a serious situation. They feel terrible to the point where what warrants them is a need for IV antibiotics. And they get the antibiotics maybe twice a day. And what's going on in the meantime is they're just lying in bed. You know, like, hello, you can lie in bed at home. So, yeah, next time, God forbid you should need it, but the next time something like that does happen, check out Encompass. And they do house calls, by the way. They can come to your house and do the IV. So twice a day. It's amazing. You know, it's, you know, unfortunately, I've needed their services and still have my record of never having slept a night in the hospital for my own sickness. Anyway, so we are in the portion of Achrimos Kedoshim. It can be found in chapters 14, 15, and following in the book of Leviticus. It's two portions, and between the two portions, there's probably close to, I want to say, 70 commandments. But because they're in this one portion, this is not two portions that are stuck together now. We look at this as being a portion. This is the portion of Achrimos Kedoshim. The name of the portion relates to everything in the portion. Achrimos, the first part of the portion, talks about what the high priest did in the temple on Yom Kippur, which relates very much to the idea of Kedoshim. Kedoshim means holy. And as the second part of the portion starts, is you have to be holy because I, God, am holy. So everything in this portion is just imbued and imbibed with holiness. There's an interesting mitzvah. One of the many which are mentioned here. I mean, if I were to go through every mitzvah, we could have the Achrimos Kedoshim show. Never mind hour. We could just devote the rest of the show to it, like for weeks and weeks. We could talk about it. And I have. Not on air, though. There's a mitzvah that says that you're not allowed to possess unfair weights and measures, meaning that you have a scale that doesn't work so well. You're a business person, and your scale isn't so accurate. Or back in the day, they had various standardized measures. You had a balance, and you had, say, a pound weight, and you would put the pound weight on one side of the balance, and then you would fill up the bag with a pound of whatever. And they did this. They had liquid measures. They had dry measures. They had, which are volume measures. They had weights. And various things were sold that way. And there's all kinds of laws about how you're supposed, like if you're getting oil, for example, how long do you have to stand there and wait for the last drop of oil to come out of the bottle? Because it takes always forever. You know, it's just like you're never going to get all the oil out of the bottle. But it is, we understand all that kind of stuff. It's an interesting thing. The basis of the Jewish religion is the Exodus of Egypt. I tell people there are so many commandments that we do in order to remind ourselves that we left Egypt. In addition to keeping the holiday of Passover with the Seder, where we recount the Exodus of Egypt and we eat the matzah, the unleavened bread, we recite the Shema in the morning, which declares God's oneness as a remembrance that we left the Shema, left Egypt. We wear the tzitzis, the corner fringes on our clothes, in order to remind us that we left Egypt. And the list goes on. And I'm just now discovering that this mitzvah of not possessing unfair measures or inaccurate weights and measures is also to remind us that we left Egypt. It's one thing to steal. Stealing, we know, everybody knows stealing is wrong. And therefore, a business person who has a pound measure that weighs, say, 15 ounces would be called a thief. Simple as that. But let's just say that a person doesn't ever use such a measure. Like, for example, I'm searching around in a barn someplace in, say, Brooklyn, Michigan somewhere, Tecumseh, Michigan. I'm driving through the back roads over there. which I have occasion to do when I'm doing kosher supervision. And some of the back roads of that part, it's not even that far away. It's like an hour and a half away from Detroit. The roads, which are called Michigan Highway such and such, I would refer to as Michigan Highway nothing. They're driveways, very long driveways. And they have these barns and they have these antiques and people. And I go into this thing and I find this really cool looking thing. And I ask the guy, what is this? And he says, that's a 1 pound weight, which is used for balancing 1 pound things. And this is made out of brass and it's really, really cool. Okay. And I take this thing and I actually weigh it and it weighs only 15 ounces. Guess what? I'm not allowed to buy it because people are going to think, okay, so I'm not into business. My business is for God. And I don't sell stuff, and I don't still sell stuff by weight. But if I have this thing in my possession, someone's going to think, oh, Finman, he's a rabbi, he's an honest guy. We assume he's a God-fearing. And therefore, I'm going to use that weight that he has in his house to measure what I need to measure. And so there is, therefore, this prohibition of even just as an me owning, possessing this inaccurate weight. We left Egypt not to leave Egypt. The Jewish people left Egypt in order to get the Torah. So indeed, not having an unfair weight and measure is a preparation for not doing else that something's wrong. In other words, we've got two negatives over here. Now, how am I going to put this into modern terms? I actually have never seen one of these brass weights anywhere in the backwoods of Michigan. And if I did, I probably wouldn't buy it anyway because I'm not into bric-a-brac and clutter, and I don't need such things, so I wouldn't buy it. If someone gave it to me, I don't know, maybe I'd put it on my desk, maybe I'd put it on eBay. But we're making measured decisions all the time. And whenever we want to do something good, there's always the evil inclination that pops up and says, no, don't do that. And this then leads us to have to measure what's right, what's wrong. In order to do that, I have to prepare first. I have to have a very good, solid background. This is where you come in too. To have learned to recognize what's right and what's wrong. Because very often, we may not know what is right and what's wrong. And that's a segue to the Hasidic story, which we're going to tell right after this commercial. Don't go away. You're listening to the Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard from the Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for the Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? Easiest way? Go to my website, rabbifinman.com. That's www.rabbifinman.com. Right on the homepage, you'll be able to contact me. And if you're interested in participating in Jewish Ferndale and Jewish Hour barbecue on Lag BaOmer on Wednesday night, May the 6th in Ferndale, you're going to go to rabbifinman.com and you're going to get a big $7 discount. That's a 30% discount if you pay for it up front than rather paying for it at the door. So go to rabbifinman.com. Right on the homepage, you can click on the picture there of the Lag BaOmer barbecue, and it'll take you to where you pay your $18 instead of $25, and then you're invited. You get to come.
There's also, what do you find? We have the show is archived over there on the radio page. We have a classes page. We have insights into the portion of the week and holidays with the U-Parsha and the E-Parsha. And we also have the donations page. We're at the end of April. We're still trying to do March. We're just about, we're as the saying goes. It could be, I'm hoping this week that we pay March. And we can only do it with your help, because you went to the Jewish Hour, you went to the RabbiFinman.com, our website, you went to the donations page, and you gave a donation through a very safe, secure way through PayPal. I have a letter here that I'm just paraphrasing right here. As it says, this is, "Dear Rabbi Finman, I listen to your show on a regular basis, and I'm including my donation of," I'm not saying how much it is, but thank God it's a very sizable donation. "You once mentioned that if that God pays four times back for when you give charity. So I once sent you, many years ago, $10, and very shortly thereafter I found that I had $40. So now I have continued to increase my donations, and I am very happy to say that every time I donate to the Jewish Hour, I do receive money back that I hadn't been counting on before. Yours truly." And I'm not going to say who it was. And it's a wonderful thing. I did say it. God does say that if you give charity, that unexpectedly you'll get four times as much back, and it could be even as much as 10 times. So go to RabbiFinman.com. Give. I'm not guaranteeing that it'll happen, but I'm not going to argue with the Talmud, and I'm not going to argue with this lady from Detroit who sent this to me. You don't like doing it that way? No problem. Send your donation in any amount to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Mayor of Premishlam. Premishlam was a little village many miles east of Grosse Pointe Farms. And the mayor of Premishlam was prominent in the 1850s, mid-1800s. He hated money. He could not go to sleep if there was money in the house. If there was money in the house, it didn't matter how late it was, he would take it, he would go find a poor person, he would go give them money. So it once happened, somebody came to him for some advice. And in return for this advice, this man gave him 300 rubles, which was quite a sizable amount of money. And the mayor put it in a drawer. The next person who came to advice was a poor farmer. He had a bunch of daughters that needed to get married. He had no money. He had bills. He had rent. He had this. That. So the mayor of Premishlam asked him, "How much do you need?" He said, "I need 300 rubles. So the mayor told him, "Come back in an hour." So came back in an hour, and the mayor gave him the money. His son, who was with him at this time, said to him, "I don't understand. I knew that you weren't going to keep the money, but why did you make him come back in an hour?" So he said, it says, "When is it that we have 300 rubles to give to somebody? This person walks in my office and says, 'I need 300 rubles. I have 300 rubles. I want to give it to him.' But in my mind, I said, why does this person need 300 rubles? I can support 10 families for a month with 30 rubles. I can support 30 families for a week with 10 rubles. So which one of these is the right decision?" So I told him, "Come back in an hour." So having the tools, knowing how to say what's the right decision, because only one of those decisions was the right one, the other two were a product of the Yetzirah. And he said, generally, if you have an inkling to do something good, do it. Even if something better comes along in your mind, stick to the good thing. It's a good thing you listened. We want to thank you so much for tuning in. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care.